Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick, and you are listening to another episode of Who's Reading the Organon? There are some beautiful thoughts going around the internet on Twitter, and I have just about five of them to read to you today. One is by someone called Faith Pica, and she says, "Vision is the art of seeing what is invisible to others." That is a quote by Jonathan Swift. Really, these are so much, they so much pertain to homeopathy, these quotes that resonate with us and are in synchronicity to what we're studying. Another one by Paul V. Harris, who is a special person on Twitter. His whole body was burned in an accident, and yet he encourages everyone to live. So he writes, "There is no fear. There is only your interpretation of the current circumstances or reality." And I encourage you to follow Paul V. Harris. Another one by Dahara says very simply, "After a storm comes a calm." This is an unknown author, and it is a proverb. So sometimes I think in terms of homeopathically, once there's an aggravation, then there's a relief. Another one by Tech Zader, and retweeted by who retweeted Perry 37, says, "When people care for you and cry for you, they can straighten out your soul," was written by Langston Hughes. And the last Twitter quote today is by someone. It's written by Healing Quotes, and it was retweeted by someone called S-Y-P-H-I-L, Syphil, also retweeted by Quotalicious. They say, "They may forget what you said, but they will never forget how they made them feel," a quote by Carl Buschner. And I'm not really going to go into very many articles of news today. I'm hoping that Vera is with us.
I'm here.
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed those quotes today.
I heard part of them. It took me a while to get connected.
If anybody has any comments, they can always put it on the live chat. I'm ready to go into the aphorisms quite quickly today, unless you have any other news.
Okay, I don't have any other news. So let's go back in. I suggest that we reread 273 and also read its footnote. And then we'll go towards 274. There is this guiding philosophy, guiding attitude of something that isn't necessary may actually, the unnecessariness of it, if you will, may dictate that it shouldn't be done. And the thought about that, I think, is very interesting in life in general, if it's true, if it's not, to turn it over in our minds. Okay, so I'm reading from Berica, 273. "In no case under treatment is it necessary, and therefore not permissible, to administer to a patient more than one single simple medicinal substance at one time. I think actually there's a translation problem in that sentence of two negatives. If it's in no case, is it not permissible?
Hahnemann has a habit of doing that, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's a little...
double negatives.
Yeah, yeah. But we understand that he's saying if it's not necessary in treatment to administer to a patient more than one single simple medicinal substance at one time, then it's not permissible to do so. It is inconceivable how the slightest doubt could exist as to whether it was more consistent with nature and more rational to prescribe a single simple medicine at one time in a disease or a mixture of several differently acting drugs. It is absolutely not allowed in homeopathy, the one true, simple, and natural art of healing, to give the patient at one time two medicinal substances.
I have a comment.
Okay.
If permissible. I'm hearing an ongoing theme, a number of ongoing themes that he's trying to portray to us, the reader. One is the one we spoke about earlier in the previous aphorism, needs versus wants. So what is it that's really needed versus what perhaps we want to do or we feel like we want to do? Another theme is doubt, the slightest doubt. So is there in the mind of the homeopath any doubt as to what is the correct procedure, the correct protocol to take? And if there's a security in your remedy selection, then you don't have a doubt. And then another theme would be the single, giving a single remedy versus a mixture. And a mixture I consider different than a compound. And then in terms of being the discipline aspect versus the leniency aspect. So this is your skill and your art in the way he wants to be an instructor of homeopaths, that they should be disciplined and skilled in their art, and that it is, the last theme I'm thinking of is there is an art of doing this healing medicine. I've given you a mouthful there.
The one thing that I find interesting to come into is concepts again of discipline, that I think the closer we get to something that's a basic principle for Hahnemann, the more this element of discipline comes in. It's as with every area where there's a set of rules. There's a set of rules and then there's an area for interpretation. But there are some basic rules that are incontrovertible, I think is the word. Mm-hmm. So the closer you get to those rules, the more an element of discipline could come in. Now, in terms of a similar substance, the way we treat, that's close to a rule. So there's a certain discipline, give similar, don't give the same, don't give opposite, don't give et cetera, et cetera. Here, we're close to something that for Hahnemann is a rule, so we've got a certain discipline, a certain clarity of absolutely don't do it. There's mm-hmm. no, there is no way, and I find it curious because 273 and subsequent aphorisms dealing with this are very, very clear on the subject. Do not give more than one substance at a time. Give more than one remedy at a time. And it's hard for me to understand how those who give more than one remedy at a time say they're working according to the Organon. And I know that some of them do, when Hahnemann is so categorically against.
Mm-hmm. Right. So to me, when you use the word absolute, that really brings to mind an absolute truth, a universal truth, a principle, a law of nature. So you cannot deviate from that. Are there exceptions to the rule? I don't know. I mean, if it's a truth, then usually you don't have that exception to the rule. Gravity is gravity. Is there an exception to gravity? I don't know. When you're in space, there's still a law of gravity. Is there not? Absence of gravity, or, you know?
Well, gravity is questionable because nobody knows quite what it is. So, I'm not sure that that I would rest with gravity, although I'm bound to the ground like most people. But the thing that I find interesting is I'm not sure that here his insistence on one remedy at a time is based around a law of nature. I think it's based around a law of logic. Even though he says whether it's more consistent with nature, but I think here the more rational to describe a single medicine at a time, I think that's more what the issue is, because if medicines have been proved, and here we're not talking about compounds, we're talking about separate substances. If each separate substance has been proved, and we know from the proving what each separate substance does, but we don't have a proving of the combined, then we don't know what's happening. We can't track. So rationally, it's like putting a cat and a pony to draw a cart. We're not quite sure who's doing the work. We're not quite sure where. What is this? I know that there has been discussion about provings of combinations. Do you know anything about that, Debbie?
What I would like to do is I would like to refine our language, and when we're talking about this aphorism and this principle of single remedy prescribing, that we use the word mixture rather than compound, because we do have compound. We do have the combination, an integration of two different minerals that create in a gestalt way a brand new remedy that has its own synthetic synthesis of symptomatology. So I would rather say, if we're talking in this vein, I think we should say a mixture, and that a mixture, okay?
Because for sure, I think it's a mixture or a combination.
Sorry,
Debbie. Sorry.
Okay, so there is another aphorism, number 159, that says two substances opposite to each other, united into neutral natrum and middle salts by chemical affinity in unchangeable proportions, as well as sulfurated metals found in the earth, and those produced by...
You're in the footnote, Debbie.
Oh, I'm in the footnote already?
You're in the footnote. That's the footnote, the two substances.
Did I skip?
No.
Did I go too far?
No, it's fine. If you want to carry on reading, from two substances, it's the footnote.
Okay. Those produced by technical art in constant combining proportions of sulfur and alkaline salts and earths, for instance, natrum salt and calcareous salt, these are combination synthesis remedies, as well as those ethers produced by distillation of alcohol and acids may together with phosphorus be considered as simple medicinal substances by the homeopathic physician and used for patients. On the other hand, those extracts obtained by means of acids of the so-called alkaloids of plants are exposed to great variety in their preparation. For instance, chinin, strychnine, morphine. And they can therefore not be accepted by the homeopathic physician as simple medicines, always the same, especially as he possesses in the plants themselves in their natural state, Peruvian bark, nux vomica, opium, as examples, every quality necessary for healing. And the last line of this is, moreover, the alkaloids are not the only constituents of the plants. And that's pretty hefty there to go through that.
Okay, well, just one point that I want to make before we actually go into it. In Aphorism 273 and in the footnote, we have references to a single simple medicine. And Hahnemann talks about simple medicinal substances. Now, this is basically to say where I personally do not want to go in this discussion, is that there's Swedenborg and Kent, and Kent writes about what a simple substance is, and there are all kinds of metaphysical attitudes to a single substance and a simple substance. And my recommendation for the purposes of this discussion is just simply not to go there, because it doesn't help us practically move in and move on. But
right,
I would refer,
you don't need to.
I would refer people, if they want to look at it, to the chapters in Kent's book I think it's called A Single Substance or A Simple Substance, and to look up the issue if anyone is extremely philosophically inclined. Here we've got differences. There's a difference between giving two medicines at the same time, giving a mixture, as you helped us refine our language, between a compound that's found in nature. And beyond that also, we have such a thing as a compound that is created, that's not found in nature. Now, my understanding within the footnote is that the two substances opposite to each other, united into neutral natrum and middle salts by chemical affinity in unchangeable proportions, that is the central issue, that when something is produced in nature, it's constantly produced in the same proportions. The compound has the same proportions of the different substances inside it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why something which is compound in nature is something that we can use, that Hahnemann accepts this. He accepts these things as simple medicinal substances. Just to repeat here, two substances opposite to each other, united into neutral natrum and middle salts by chemical affinity in unchangeable proportions. The unchangeable should be writ large, as well as sulfuretted metals found in the earth and those produced by technical art in constant combining proportions. So here he's allowing in also those produced by technical art in constant combining proportions of sulfur and alkaline salts and earths, for instance, natrum salt, calcarea salt, as well as those ethers produced by distillation of alcohol and acids, may, together with phosphorus, be considered as simple medicinal substances by the homeopathic physician and used for patients. Now, within all this, there's the understanding that all these substances do have to be proved. Right? I would say that. Would you say that?
Yes. Yes, and I'm hearing the language of there is a constant, the affinity means that there is a relationship. There's a relationship between the elements or whatever these substances are together. And when a homeopath, or I keep thinking about drugs that are given, medicinal drugs, not homeopathic drugs, that you that are prescribed on a regular basis, they have no concept whatsoever of the relationship of those drugs in the human being, and still they prescribe it. And here Hahnemann is saying that these particular elements or have an affinity with each other in a constant proportion, in a constant relationship. So when you create heparcalcarea salts, there are there's a reaction going on between those elements that are in a constant relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so, go ahead.
So very much part of the issue is, if you're going to create something, it has to have created in constant. And here we see the second part of the footnote. Hahnemann is saying that extracts obtained by means of acids, of alkaloids of plants, are not created in a constant way. There's a great variety in the preparation. So they can't be accepted by the homeopathic physician as a simple medicine.
This is questionable to me. I'm questioning this because we do have in the Materia Medica strychnine and morphine and that type of In other words, a negative reaction where something is broken down into its constituent parts and, I guess, isolated from the totality of the plant. So is it acceptable or is it not? Because it is in our Materia Medica. Is it due to the fact of the evolution and development of humanity, how we abuse these types of drugs? Or should we only stick to what he has written here?
I think that there are technological advances which allow extracts to be prepared in ways that are much more constant than previously. But then we can land up in the broader question of how many remedies do we need, and does it mean that we are less effective if we need more remedies and can't work with the existing toolboxes? So I think that question is very valid and very open, and I think it will constantly remain open in terms of is the way Hahnemann worked and Hahnemann's restrictions here the only way to see it.
If we're working outside the box of the classical method laid down by Hahnemann, perhaps we can call it another method of working that is not within the guidelines that he's provided, and that it could perhaps do some good, but then return to the classical method for the continued healing. I don't know how you feel about that.
I would think that probably the way Hahnemann himself would have seen it is, if you develop a method of obtaining extracts in a way that is constant, completely constant, and that the proportions of the substances inside the mix are unchangeable, then you put it through a proving. Only once it's been proved, and proved in such a way that you can see what this compound can do, can it come in? But it seems to me that we're coming back to the question of, it's not necessary and therefore it's not permissible. That Hahnemann felt it was much more rational to work with individual remedies. So here again, it's very often, I think it's human nature to be curious and to play. And very often we get one instruction and then we start playing, whether it's a recipe, a cake, or a sulfur-retted metal. And there comes a question when we're dealing with people's health of why play? Is it necessary? If it's necessary, then it's something that can be valuable. But if it's not necessary, then it's something that possibly is not permissible because it simply muddies the picture and makes the case impossible to track.
I have a question about what you've indicated here. What you're saying is, if there is a solution within the organon, within the guidelines that are given, and we've studied and learned and know how to use it properly, then why go outside the box? Now, my other question is, on a different line of thought, if we have many people who are drug abusers and taking into the body these toxins and having clinical poisoning and symptomatology, is this not like approving to be a person who's taking LSD or morphine or whatever it is? Shall we only work within the guidelines and know the solutions to these problems via the totality of the substance? Or is the fact that so many people are producing these symptoms enough of approving? Are you following me?
I'm following you, but my understanding is that we get information about remedies from three sources. We get information from poisonings, from provings, and from clinical work. Like sometimes there's a lot of literature out there of remedies that have never been through proving, but they've worked very nicely with cases. So there the question is part of the definition of homeopathy that remedies have to go through proving. And mm-hmm. within the framework of the Organon, within the framework of the grand homeopathic experiment, remedies have to go through proving. And if we're working with remedies that have not gone through proving, there is a question mark about whether this work can be considered homeopathy.
Okay. Then, in today's world, in contemporary life, 2010, there are many new provings being done, are there not?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so perhaps we will, in the future, be able to add more remedies to the Materia Medica when they include the provings, the poisonings, and the clinical work.
I think that's certainly true. But I think also that we, it's a sticky one, because we're here not to follow a rule. We're here to improve the lives of our patients. We're here to improve quality of life by helping them get back to their purpose in life without being constantly bothered by the ailments that they're experiencing. And if we find our route to that through a remedy that has not been proven, there's the huge question of, well, okay, so it's not exactly the way Hahnemann said to do it. So what? And then question. Sorry?
I'm not deviating from the rule. I'm saying that when the three prerequisites have been met, then it could be added to the Materia Medica.
Oh, I'm not saying you're deviating from the rule. What I'm saying is that it's part of the confusion amongst homeopaths and in homeopathy today. And this confusion, this divisiveness, comes so strongly around this issue. If I have helped my patient, if I have helped HIV through a remedy that was not proved, who cares if it's homeopathy or not? This is part of the big question. And part of the question is, well, I'm a homeopath, I'm giving a remedy in potency, I'm giving it after succussion and dilution. I'm really raising questions here. I'm opening various cans of worms, or Pandora's boxes. But these are things that are going on in the homeopathic world today. And it's something that we are constantly following and constantly seeing how people are defining homeopathy. But ultimately, homeopathy, I think, can only be defined by the original blueprint. So anyway, it's a very complex discussion. I'm not sure it's really part of our mandate here, which is why I chose, from my point of view, just simply to open up the questions which are being discussed in the homeopathic world. But for the purposes of our discussion, within the framework of the Organon and of the way Hahnemann has presented, there is no need, and therefore it is absolutely not permissible to give more than one remedy at a time. Mm-hmm. And he goes on in 274, we'll discuss tomorrow, he goes on about the issue of proving.
Okay. I thought this was really a very good thought-provoking talk today.
Yeah, it's complicated. We live with open questions, and this is one of them, I think.
Okay, so we're ready to do our umbrella thought for what we discussed and learned. Each session seems to go quicker and quicker. Okay, so is there anything more that you would like to add?
There is so much more to say about this subject, and I think so little that is conclusive, that it is best just to go back to Hahnemann's words. I think it's more straightforward than anything I could come up with.
Okay, so we're going to tell people that what they need to do is take the Organon off the shelf and read it, and that we will continue with aphorism 274 tomorrow.
That's right.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay, I want to thank everyone. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, bye.
Hi, Debbie.
Good morning.
Hi, Debbie.
Oops. Good morning. I'm sorry.
Oops.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.